Hi Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Fine, Andrew, fine. How are you?
Good, good. It's feels like it was a slightly eventful week this past week.
Is it so?
Something happened. I
Well,
can't
but
remember.
look at the beautiful market reaction. I mean, both bonds and stocks are up. This is very interesting.
Make America wealthy again. Seems like it's taking off so far. So let's kind of dive in. Any kind of unique takes or kind of surprise movements or anything? Obviously this week, obviously we had the US election, but obviously we also had the Fed. So any big takeaways, anything you think people may be missing, either now or in going forward?
So the reaction to the election result is super interesting. A couple of weeks before the election, I had published that spoof of a letter from the Treasury Secretary to President-elect Trump, trying to make sense of the Trump economic agenda, basically looking for a way to implement it that was actually positive for growth with limited impact on inflation. And I look at market reaction, and of course, there is the issue of positioning, the fact that this time around, a Trump victory was, or the risk was well discounted. It wasn't a surprise as in 2016. But, looking at the bond market reaction and the fact that we very likely will have a clean Republican sweep of Congress, we don't have the result of all the House races, but on balance, it's more likely than not that there will be a small Republican majority. I'm wondering if markets are not taking my view, which is, Trump knows that he won largely because voters' income went down under Biden, something which, I've been repeating and has been completely ignored by the mainstream media. It's not about inflation, it's about nominal wages relative to inflation. I don't know. I mean, this is such a basic thing. Anyway. So he's not, if there is a burst of inflation in the first 2 years of his mandate, the Republicans are going to lose the 2026 elections. So simple rationality would suggest that he looks for a way to implement his agenda, which, I think has some elements that are really pro-growth without having a big burst of inflation. And I suspect that's what the bond market is pricing. Basically, that rationality will prevail, which, yeah, it sounds reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, it'd definitely be threading the needle. I guess the question is there a scenario where the US is growing at 3%? Say, like, that's his goal, right? And probably a reasonable thing to think about, to assume. If the US is growing at 3%, can they hold inflation at, whatever, 2.5 or 2.25? It will be hard. Now, one of the things, obviously, if they can show real impact on reducing the size of the government and saving money, I mean, that seems that would help put those two things together. But barring that, I think it seems like it'd be a tough thing.
Well, I think they could if they were able to generate enough productivity gains. So, if you had a sort of positive supply shock. So, under Biden, we had a positive supply shock with the increase in immigration, but it lowered wages and real income made people very angry. So, they voted for Trump. So, could Trump, and I suspect, by the way, because I've spoken to my Republican friends about, this immigration policy, and they couldn't make any sense of it and saw it as a conspiracy to increase Democratic voters. I don't think so. It sounds very far-fetched. I think it was more that the administration saw the burst of inflation created by its policies, and then they thought, we have all these poor people trying to enter the US. Maybe if you will let them in, this will help moderate inflationary pressure, which it did, but I think it backfired politically in a spectacular manner. So we'll see. So in terms of can you have growth at 3% and low inflation? So you would need to generate a positive supply shock. I think the main avenue would be through deregulation. To be honest, I don't know how much you can get out of that. Very
That will take
possible.
time, yeah. I guess lower oil prices, that's another. I mean, you get oil at $50.
Yeah, but can you do that? I mean, very possible. I mean, Trump, I mean, the way to do that would be to rely on foreign policy, limit, the risk of escalation in the Middle East, get OPEC to open the tap,
Yeah, so they
and of
sell like
course,
2 million,
lift.
Russia even has 1 million, and then there's
Ah,
another
lift,
one and a half.
lift, lift. Yeah.
But why would they do that if like they don't want oil at $50 either? So
Well, but if you lifted the sanction on Russia as well, you could have. So there are. So it's not impossible. There are many levers a Trump administration could use. The other way in which you may not have much inflation and strong growth for a very popular Trump administration would be if you raise the income share of workers. So you have, say, the same growth level, but you have higher wage growth and slower profit growth. And you do that simply by restraining immigration. And by the way, if you look at the behavior of real wages, there was a pickup under the first Trump administration after they might finally got their act together and tapered the flows of migrants. And if you had strong enough competition policy, that would prevent businesses from matching increase in wages with increase in prices. So there
so
is,
reduce profit margins, basically.
yeah. And the impact on the stock market, it's a bit of a wash, right? Because you could have stronger growth, but profit would get a smaller share of that. So there is
Well,
a
so
part.
much of the stock market, how people view it, is like seven or eight companies anyway. That's like, I don't know, 25 or
Oh, for
30%.
sure.
And
For
those
sure.
companies probably won't be impacted that much by this,
Well, they will be more impacted by the Fed, so maybe it's a good signal. I think for in terms of the market impact of Trump, we have to see who he appoints, and then we'll get a sense. I think the market thinks it will be rational policy making. I'm all for it, and let's see. Competition policy to me is a very important driver of inflation. And growth. We had a shift under Biden, which I think reflected a deeper political trend of people unhappy with expensive lifestyles and the lack of progress on their real income. So let's see how that matters, but how that shakes out.
Oh, one thing I wanted to ask was all this forgiveness or delayed in payment for school loans. That
Very
continue,
regressive.
is that a big deal? Are those numbers like huge or no?
I think only about 15% of Americans have college loans simply because not many of them go to college. It's expensive. I mean, that forgiveness was, highly regressive because you are going to transfer money from the general taxpayers to a group of people who were making more, I mean, college graduates, than to make more money than the average American. So that's out. And actually, one of the plans of the incoming administration is to expand apprenticeship and spend more money on, non-college education than college education, which I think would be an excellent thing. But it will take time. I mean, the devil is in the detail, all the usual caveat apply. Let's see who gets appointed in the key economic jobs. So back to, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, and then back to market. So are you surprised by them, let's focus on the rates. Are you surprised by any of the rate moves, the shape of the curve? Or do you think it pretty much makes sense? Or is there a narrative that may become unraveled in the next week or two, you think, or longer?
So I really think it depends on the appointment. That if we get someone like Scott Bessent at the Treasury who knows his economics and will implement sensible policy, yeah, it makes all sense. If it makes sense. If we get someone who is more of a loose cannon and has you on, trade, capital controls that are a bit, difficult to make sense of, someone like Lighthizer, then I would get a bit worried and would think it's going to unravel. But I think the basic point here is that there is an enormous range of possible policy under the broad themes of tariff, tax cuts, and immigration restriction. You can implement those in a way that's positive for growth without much impact on inflation, or you can completely blow out the US economy and have inflation go back to above 5% next year.
I guess last one in the segue into the next week. How did any big takeaways from the Fed, or was it like kind of right down the fairway?
Well, it's basically confirmed what I already thought, which is a Fed strategy to bring inflation to the target, back to the target, is to use something which personally I think is a bit magical, but we'll see, which they call opportunistic disinflation. And the idea is that when inflation goes up, you react, but when inflation goes down, you don't. And if you look at the behavior of the Fed funds rate in the 1990s, the second half, especially, you see it going up and down. And this is when they implemented this opportunistic disinflation. I don't think it's going to work this time around because, and that's something I will write about. If you look at the shocks in the 1990s, the inflation shocks, they were mainly negative. And by shock, I mean very specifically the difference between low volatility measure of inflation, like trimmed, which is inflation when you exclude all of the big moves in prices, and actual inflation. And you can see that all those shocks, the outliers in terms of price changes, they were mainly negative in the 1990s because we were in a period of disinflation. The broad trends were for disinflation. This was the beginning of the globalization. Also, you had all the conservative policies that lowered the share of labor income and labor market power, and so on. But if you look at the difference between trimmed mean and headline inflation, you can see that this time around the shocks are positive. So I think it would be wonderful if the Fed would be able to do that. I just don't think that there will be the negative inflation shock that would allow them to do it. And more broadly, there is a big issue, which again, I think it's like the real wage. I feel so frustrated. I've been saying real wage are going down. That's why people are not happy. And I think this time around, where I'm kind of shouting from the rooftop and not getting heard, is about the US economy is overheating. I mean, look at the stabilization of inflation. Look at the widening of the external trade, and a respectable think tank like the CBO, which is the most bipartisan, down to earth, and they have to be because their job is to score the costs of the laws adopted by Congress. And in the, in the very difficult tense political atmosphere that we have, if you do this job and you are not as objective as you can, you die. I mean, some. So those guys, they show a positive output gap for the US, which makes sense if you look at the difference between growth, actual growth, about 3%, and the trend, which is about 2%. So inflation is not going down, no matter what the Fed
Well,
is
let me ask
saying.
you a question. Is the other school of thought, or has it been kind of dismissed, like the Fed is kind of like, you know what? It's kind of like 2.5 to 2.75 really is our.
Well, that's it. That's basically where we are headed. And to be fair, Andrew, I mean, if you were Jay Powell, would you crush the US economy for the sake of having inflation go from 2.5? So as long as it remains stable, I think both the Fed and markets will be happy. The problem is that it's a little bit the slippery slope. I mean, this is what happened in the early 60s. You had a shock, the Fed didn't stabilize fully inflation. The next shock, inflation moved up, and so until the oil crisis, the oil price shock, and then the high inflation of the 70s. So, God knows. I think there is a good case to be made for both views, that you shouldn't crush the economy just for the sake of economic orthodoxy, or you should think long term and actually do bring that recession to maintain your credibility. But in reality, the Fed is going to stick with the former. I just don't think they will be able to
It's
catch
saying,
up.
I think, even more now. Okay, so and then just like data, events, anything, what should people be looking at next week? What are you looking out for?
So we have the CPI, and I believe we have retail sales.
Sales, yeah, retail sales.
Yeah. So on the CPI, the sort of a critical value. So it's not just the CPI, of course, CPI and PPI, because the price index that the Fed targets is PCE. So the critical value for core PCE estimate is 25 basis points. I think if we stay below that, the Fed will cut in December. I think it's more likely than not that we will have the two prints on average below that. So yeah, that's how I would look at it. In terms of retail sales, so my view is that, with the end of the surge in immigration, the positive supply shock that allows the Fed to have disinflation with strong growth, that's going away. So I think what we're going to have is sticky inflation and slower growth. So let's see how this shakes up in terms of retail sales. Very hard to predict, in the short term, but in
Yeah,
over the
month to
next
month.
6 months, I think consumption growth is going to slow.
Okay, cool. All right, this has been great as always. Obviously, kind of unique time, unique times of the election. And then I guess the other thing is, besides the data and anything, it's just like how the market continues to digest post-election. And I guess your point too. When would the Trump administration start announcing some posts? I saw that they announced the chief of staff, I guess that would lead the transition team or them along with one or two other people, Howard Lutnick and other people.
So I would think within the next couple of weeks, they are much better prepared this time around. They've put together a more cohesive transition team, so we should get the top names within the next couple of weeks, I would think.
Awesome. Obviously, there's a lot going on, and our clients were really focused on headlines and markets. Obviously, always focus on markets, but a few pieces even out today. Well, Bilal was on Bloomberg this morning. It's good to see that talking about the effect of Trump's victory may have on markets and also Fed independence. Also, the Henry and Caroline focus on Europe, I think, can be particularly interesting. It's been mixed so far. I feel like rates are going higher in Europe because there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Europeans to spend on things like defense and trade, and then maybe there's also more inflation and maybe some pushing back on imported goods from places like China or other places. But generally, I'm assuming it may mean a focus on trying to get growth and be more independent in Europe. Few new trade ideas out, certainly across the rate space. Suggest everyone checking through. It was a great update on the G10 FX Weekly. Generally, looking at the dollar to continue to grind higher, and probably vols continue to come lower. Although I do think there's a point if it, probably downside in euro and sterling could look interesting. Vols have gotten hit there so far, but a lot of emerging markets. In other currencies, vols are getting hit pretty hard. Continue to have the bullish view on dollar China with the RKO as a way to express that. Yeah, many other kind of super interesting pieces this week. So as always, wish everyone the best of luck. And Dominic, have a wonderful weekend. And
You too, Andrew.
and good luck, everybody.